Hello everyone, this is Yoshi. I'm the editor of the podcast. This is part 3 of The Meaning of Black Belt, where David, Anna, Rachel, and I all discuss The Meaning of Black Belt. If you missed part 2, don't forget to go back to the website and listen to that before diving into this episode. For now, this is part 3.
Alright, so it would be safe to say both of you have at least a decade of training experience at this point,
mm-hmm.
right?
Black belts for old.
We all get there, right? we've all had plenty of black belt experience, but there are times where either our fellow classmates or other maybe some of our juniors get to that same black belt stage, but then they no longer continue training. Right. One way or the other, excluding like life circumstances or injury, other setbacks, someone says get a black belt and they intentionally quit. They just no longer continue training. What are your thoughts on that?
You make me sad. I like insert sad trombone noise here. I understand life happens, right? Whether, like you said, Yoshi, right? Whether it's personal things, life, in like, you know, injury, you know, my training was pretty inconsistent for a while between Chodan and Edon because I was working in a position where I was on second shift. So I was working during prime training hours for any sort of class. I was working from roughly 3 p.m. to 11 p.m. So there weren't classes available for me. So it was really up to me to train on my own. And I would go to events and tournaments and training events when I could, right? But I was also in a position where I worked in a laboratory that was a 24/7 lab. So I would work weekends too. So sometimes that meant I wouldn't go to training events either. So it was really hard. But I have found so many friends and such a community within the martial arts that what kept me wanting to train besides my love of martial arts is the love of the people that I was always around, and I would miss them a lot. And so I would try to make as many things as I could, do as many training things as I could, and was just patient with myself and knowing, like, you know, right now isn't my time to be training as hard as I really should be or want to be, right, in order to test. But that time will come, and eventually it did. I got to a position in my career where I was on a more normal schedule. I got my body healthy again. So I guess it makes me sad when people stop. I know that there's a lot of things that happen, but that force people into stopping. But that doesn't mean that it's forever either, right? We always talk about martial arts as a journey. So maybe that's just where they're at in their journey right now. And they should just know that there's always a way back, right? Maybe it's not right now, but maybe a couple years down the line, maybe even 5 or 10 years down the line, life opens up again and you can come back anytime and hit the mat and you're always welcome.
Like that Jeff Goldblum quote, like, no, life finds a way. Shorts find a way.
You yes. mean the Jurassic Park yes. quote?
Yes.
Yes. Well, for me, if you quit after black belt, just kidding.
Anna, are you going right to vocalize though. What you wrote on that piece of paper?
For those who are just listening, Anna put a sheet of paper up to the camera. I guess I'll leave it up to Anna if she wants to share that or not.
It said, dead to me. Just kidding. That's a slight inside joke. But for me, like, it kind of depends on the situation, I guess. So, you know, like you said, you know, life circumstances, personal reasons, blah, 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 that kind of stuff. Like, I understand. And I agree, you know, with what Rachel said, how you can always come back. We've had people that have just come back to our region after being, you know, out of martial arts for 10-ish years, and they're still like, I mean, they come back, and you know, it only takes a couple months for them to get pretty much dialed back in. And so, yeah, it's something that never really leaves you. And the way that I see it too is that our art, especially, I think our art and other, you know, traditional martial arts, it serves as a great foundation and great, you know, maybe our art doesn't have the amount of contact fighting that you prefer. That's fine, you know. So maybe you get your foundation in Tung Sudo, get your black belt, and then you want to branch off into something else. And you know, in kind of similar to Rachel, like it does make me sad that they can't find, you know, what they like in this art, just because, you know, I have found so much, you know, so much, I guess, not only, you know, discipline and, you know, friendship as well, you know, all that stuff. But I've also just found, you know, there is a lot of freedom in our art. You know, you can find and experiment with a lot of different things. But, you know, that being said, I understand, you know, maybe some people want to go and do something more ground focused, you know, a jiu-jitsu kind of thing. And, you know, that's fine too. I just think that, you know, just remember that, you know, where your roots came from. And I think that, you know, anybody who wants to do any, you know, any other martial art, I think it's a good idea to have, especially like a sport martial art, I think it's a good idea to, you know, get a foundation first in a traditional art, because even, you know, if you listen to interviews of MMA fighters and, you know, UFC fighters that are successful, a lot of them say, you know, that they have trained previously in, you know, a traditional martial art just to get kind of the, you know, the basics down. And a lot of those, you know, just, I guess, baseline techniques are seen in many different styles, and you know, they kind of are just the basic that you can build up upon. So I think it's a, you know, a great idea to, you know, start in a traditional art, get a good basis in there, and then if you find that, you know, the traditional route is not really what you want, maybe you don't necessarily, you know, like, you enjoy the family aspect, but that's not really what you're looking for, you know, I understand. I just think that, you know, don't forget where you came from, and don't, like, I've seen a lot of people, you know, either stop training in martial arts altogether or stop training in their original art, and then they start to feel some sort of, not hostility, but, you know, they start to compare their new art that they're training in to their old art and start finding the holes, you know, that maybe the first art didn't, you know, cover or whatever. But, you know, I would advise against that, just because, you know, every art has their own rules and their own, you know, just way of executing their techniques. So just because, you know, we traditional styles do it this way versus, you know, maybe more modern styles do it this way, it doesn't mean that one is more legit over the other.
Right.
It just means that, you know, you've learned two different ways to do a technique, basically. So that was kind of a long-winded response to the question. No, but yeah, okay, good. I was hoping that
I'm also gonna add a small sentence to all of this. Don't get a black belt just to say you have a black belt and then leave, because that's rude.
Yeah, that kind of also, like, yeah, it's always almost a little silly, because, you know, you train discipline and, like, goal setting and, you know, all these things, and then you finally reach a goal and then you're like, oh, okay, I'm done.
And I feel like
almost a little silly.
I feel like our art kind of does a lot to deter that, because we don't do the, I don't know, like, the McDojo style as much as I don't want to use that term, but it's true, right? But the McDojo style of black belt, where, you know, that really does encourage people to just, like, get the black belt and dip, right? Because I feel like in our style and a lot of other styles too, for sure, it's like, if you're going to dedicate yourself to really put in the amount of time and effort it takes to get to your black belt, you're in it for the long haul at that point, for the most part. I don't see a lot of people really doing that outside of a McDojo setting. I feel like that setting really encourages the people that just want the black belt so that they have the title and then they dip. Because yeah, to your point on it, that's just silly. If you're going to really truly dedicate all of this time and effort and training, and then you're just going to dip afterwards, like, you miss the point.
Plus, then oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, like it always bamboozled me. Like, wouldn't these people who just got this really coveted thing want to at least wear it in class, like, a couple of times? But they just get it and dip? Like, you get this cool, in Tungsudo, you get this cool trimmed uniform and the belt that you work so hard for, and you're just gonna put it in the closet. You're not gonna wear it. Like, come on.
Right.
Yeah.
Don't worry about using McDojo. We've used that term plenty of times in our first podcast. So
okay, fair enough.
Yeah, I was just gonna add on to that too. One thing that also we see a lot of is if you take a break for longer than a month or so, it's really hard to come back, especially as an adult. You know, that being said, people do it, and we applaud the people that do, especially those who have been gone for years and years. But we see that, like, some people that, you know, maybe they got their black belt when they were younger, and then they come back when they're, you know, a little bit older, they start to get really frustrated with themselves because they're like, I know that I was able to do this better before, you know, and everything. And, like, you know, if you kind of think of black belt as, like, you know, your goal and then stopping point, then, you know, you're kind of setting yourself up for disappointment, I guess, if you ever try to come back to it, because, you know, you get used to getting, you know, a good level of skill with these techniques, but then, you know, you stop training them, you stop doing the things that you're used to doing every day, you stop stretching as much as you usually do, and then you come back after 5-10 years and you're like, oh no, I can't kick as high, like, now my kicks are barely reaching chest level when before they were way over my head, you know. So
must be nice to go way over your head with a kick. Side note, I am just very inflexible from years of swimming. I have the smallest, tiniest hamstrings. I've worked on it, and my kicks are far better than they were when I started. That's for dang sure. But for those of you out there that have waist level kicks, that's okay too. Don't let Anna shame you.
Yeah, sorry. I'm kind of thinking of my own experience where there was, you know, going, I tested with this one girl who is 2 years younger than me. So I was 16 and she was 14 testing for black belt, and she just had the effortless flexibility, you know. But yeah, after you know, a couple years, for, you know, multiple reasons, she wasn't able to come as much, blah blah blah. And yeah, it every time she's come to come, or she's tried to come back to class, it's been difficult for her. Yeah, because, you know, she's used to, you know, in that setting, having these kicks that everyone's like, whoa, that's insane. But then now she comes back and it's like, oh, you know, that's normal. Or it's a great kick for people that didn't know what she looked like before. But yeah, of course, she remembers what she looked like before. Uh-huh. And it's frustrating that she can't get to that level again without, you know, putting in all of the time and work that she did before. Well, I mean, it was natural flexibility. So now it would have to be like, you know, she has to kind of put in a little bit more.
Yeah, now it's
work.
Now so, it's work.
Yes. Yeah. So, and this is nothing against her personally. It's just like an observation I've made where, you know, if you, you know, have this goal and then you treat that as kind of your end goal, you know, you're going to be disappointed. You're kind of setting yourself up for disappointment, I guess, if you try to come back after, you know, taking a handful of years off. And, you know, that being said, like, everyone's always very encouraging in the class and being like, hey, it's so great to see you again. Like, let's, you know, keep training, like, let's keep coming back. But, you know, like I said, it's just an observation I've seen with the people, like, judging themselves, you know, they're comparing themselves from when they used to be. That's why it's always really cool when, you know, somebody comes back after being gone for 10, 15 years and, you know, they're older now, but, you know, they still keep training. You know, they're like, yeah, I, you know, not as great as I used to be, but, you know, here I am. And yeah, so I always have a lot of respect for the people who, you know, come back after a long break and keep coming back.
The moral of the story is don't stop training or don't get old.
Anybody found the Fountain of Karate Youth yet? A question for Yoshi.
A question for me. Oh, my.
Brainstorm a question.
Okay.
But first, a question for Yoshi.
Did you, in your previous episode, or have you brought up the meaning of the word Dawn? We're talking about the meaning of black belt, and I feel like I'm putting you on the spot if you didn't actually previously research this, but I know you're very big into the actual meaning of our words and their origin, and when, you know, I know you've written several articles about that, you know, meanings of Hyung and Kyeop, and I think I'm trying to think of other ones you've written, but anyway, so I was just wondering if you had a definition of Dawn for us, which, for those that don't know, a Dawn in Korean is what we call our black belts.
Yeah, I guess it depends on when this podcast is published and when the article is published. I did write an article about the meaning of Gup and Dawn, and they're fairly equivalent. I'll say fairly equivalent, but there's some nuance between two. Dawn, in layman's terms, means level, essentially.
Okay.
We have terminology like Handan, Chungdan, Samdan, right? Low level, high, middle level, high level, right? So Dawn is just means level, right? Okay. And when we say Chodan, right? Cho means beginning. So Chodan means the first step, beginning level, that first level. Or step is another way we can say it, like step up the stairs, right? So it's really just in a one-for-one perspective, getting that black belt means you're just taking your first step on that path of black belt. So not necessarily the end, a culmination. It is in a sense a culmination of a journey, but it's also the beginning of a journey. All right,
ooh, I love that.
Gup, for those who have. Means like class or rank, right? So there's a reason why we go from 10th Gup to first Gup, and they go from first Dan to however many Dons you go. So your ranks, the number goes smaller, right? You go from 10th Gup, 9th, 8th, however up to first Gup, right? So that's your first rank of all your color belts, essentially. You're at the top. Then we have, at least in our association, we have this rank called Chonambo, right? Chonambo means black belt candidate. And then we test for our black belt, and then we go to that first level of that black belt. Now, Chonambo, word is something I want to dig into later. That's something I haven't had time to research yet, but that's a whole separate, I think it's a whole separate article on its own, in my opinion. But that's a sort of a short summary of what Dawn means, Dawn and Gut means.
Nice. I appreciate it. That's awesome. Thank you.
Yep. I was not expecting that question at all.
I know you weren't. I knew I threw you off.
That's okay.
Way to be prepared.
No. Yeah. I have a follow-up. Not really a follow-up question. A separate question. We talked about this in the first podcast episode as well. But I can say first podcast, the part one of the podcast. We discussed what to us is the difference between like first degree and second degree black belt. And conversely, what's the difference between second and third degree black belt, and so on and so forth. I guess since Anna just stepped off screen, or maybe, oh, she's back. Anyway, what to you is the difference between that first degree and that second degree? Not just in like terms of requirements, but what do you look for in a second degree that's not in the first degree?
Well, my instructor used to always say that a second degree was just a good first degree. And a third degree was just a good second degree.
I love that you had that. I believe you had that exact same answer in part one. So,
also, I know like what instructor you're talking about, and this is not a surprising answer.
No. Although one time I asked him the same question, and I said, "If a second degree is a good first degree, what's a third degree?" And this instructor said, "A third degree is a black belt that actually knows something."
I am not surprised by that answer either.
There we go. Yes. So that's kind of how I've always thought of the black belt. But then there's also the like, I guess it's a little bit more in the jump from second to third degree that I feel that there is like a responsibility shift. But even, you know, the jump from first degree to second degree, like, you know, I remember, I forget who was talking to me about this, but they were saying that, you know, you can pretty much get your first degree black belt if you meet all the requirements, you show all the requirements, and you have, you know, like intent, and you put, you know, more or less your heart into it. For second degree, they're going to be more picky. So, you know, it's not enough to just know the requirements and be good at them. It's now you have to show that these things work, that these things, like, that you can make these things work, and that, you know, you are, I guess, actually, you know, not just going through the motions, but more so making them yours. And then for third degree, it's taking that, but to an even higher step, to where, like, you should be able to do, you know, like the random self-defense skills, and you should be able to get out of them. You should be able to, you know, do something that is asked of you, that even if it's, you know, something crazy, like a 7-move combination, you should be able to do, you know, each move powerfully, you know, that whole thing. And in addition, you know, second degrees, I feel like, you know, that's when you start to kind of make yourself known throughout the region. First degree you do as well, but, you know, there's a lot of first degrees. So, you know, naturally you'll have people. I remember hearing the statistic. I don't know if it's true or not, but it's, you know, like 1 out of every 100 people get to black belt. And then it just goes, it gets smaller and smaller for the higher rank. So by the time, you know, you're testing for like your third degree, it's only like 1 out of, you know, 10,000 that make it there or something. I don't know if that's necessarily true, but that's kind of how I, you know, thought about it. And just the fact that, like, if you're going for a higher rank of black belt, you need to be showing a higher level of skill. And you also need to start, I guess, you know, letting your skills kind of speak for themselves, more or less. Like, there's, when you're a second degree, you know, people should, I guess, know you and know how you move and know how, you know, your techniques more or less look, and they should know your skill set, you know, like, oh, that person's really good at self-defense, let's put them, you know, helping with a session with that, you know, that kind of thing. Third degree is when, you know, you start to like put yourself out there and be like, I'm gonna be, you know, I can teach this and this, you know, I can you know, run a black belt test. I'm, you know, kind of stepping up that even more level of now responsibility, not just responsibility and technique, but also responsibility throughout the region and, you know, beyond.
Yeah, I think on the theoretical statistic that I think we've all heard at one point or another, I just Googled it, was that for every 10,000 people that join a martial arts academy, half will drop out within the first 6 months. Of those students remaining, about 1,000 will complete 1 year of training and then quit. 500 will study for 2 years, but only 100 will see their third anniversary. On the average, only 10 will actually make first degree black belt. And then only 1 or 2 of those, that of those 10, would then make it to second degree black belt. So roughly 1 in 10,000 people achieve black belt and stay with it past first degree.
Yeah, and I kind of saw that in my own testing group from my studio. I mean, excluding now, because for my, like I mentioned, my first degree, David was part of that, but he was testing for his second degree. So then after that test, our cycles didn't line up. So excluding him from my like mental, you know, whatever, there were essentially six people that tested with me that I knew that were testing for the same level. And so six people for my first degree, and then for second degree, it went down to four of those people were testing. And then from there, for third degree, only two of us ended up like on time testing for our third degree. So yeah, like I kind of saw that, I guess, go into play more or less. So yeah.
And how many of them do you think are going to go to the master's clinic?
On time? None. But yeah, I guess so far one. So yeah, it's the number is dwindling.
I guess.
But yes.
Putting a question to Rachel, like how many of your those who tested for first degree with you are still training? I guess you say you didn't have anyone with you, did you?
I didn't have anybody from my university.
Not university, but maybe in your first degree class, people who were testing for first degree with you. Do you know how many are still testing or still test training? Sorry.
Well, I can tell you from my university, there was only one other person after me, years after me, actually, only recently. Tested for and passed her first degree black belt test. I was the last one for a very long time from that club program to actually test for black belt. And then we just had somebody recently come back, having trained in the university program, came back and just tested.
Outside of university, I think.
Outside of university, though, yeah. I think I can name... Or maybe five people that were testing for first degree with me off the top of my head. There might be more than that, and I'm just forgetting, but I can name a lot more people that were testing for second and third degree at the time that I was testing for first degree that they're still training. But I can also name some of them that have dropped out too. Yeah. I had mentioned my roommate in college who was a brand new EDON at the time. I figured she would easily be a SOMDON by now. She would continue training. She had been training for so long. I was quite surprised that she didn't end up training. But again, I think it was one of those life happened things, and martial arts was no longer in her, you know, direct path anymore. So yeah, it's always surprising when you encounter people that you go, oh yeah, you're somebody that would, I feel like, would just keep training and, you know, work your way up the ranks, and they just go, no, I don't know. It's surprising.
Yeah, I know for my, especially for my second degree testing cycle, like a lot of the people I test for second degree with also test for first degree with, so a lot of them, that was consistent for me. But then when I got to my third degree, it was only me and one other person from that testing cycle testing for a third degree. It was a bit of a kind of a shock to me that the others didn't continue training. But again, like you said, life happens. I don't know if Dave, if you observed that in your testing cycles as well for a second.
Yeah, for me, when I tested for third degree, actually a lot of people, or not a lot of them, but a solid chunk of the people that tested for second dan when I tested for first dan were also testing for third dan at that point. But other than that, the two people that I tested for first dan with, because that whole dan test was only six people. That was the size of that, you know, candidate group, six people. Three of them were Edan candidates. Three of them were Chodan candidates. All the Chodan candidates tested for Edan at some point, but only one of them tested on time with me. And then out of that group, I'm the only one to test for Samdan or higher.
Yeah, when I mentioned my group, that was just the group of people that were from my school or our school adjacent. There were more people testing on the floor. I just, like, for me, those were the kind of the group that stuck out in my head because I had trained with them and knew them. So if I really thought about it, I could probably think of a couple more, like, at least one of the Samdan candidates that was testing that time is still in it. But actually, yeah, because then the other one has left. But yeah, so that's kind of just where my mind went. So I don't know the actual statistic of everyone in the test, but yeah.
All right. I guess we've been recording for about an hour and a half ish or so.
Yeah.
I guess to wrap this up, any closing thoughts, Rachel, Anna?
It's never too late to start or to get a black belt. I think one of my favorite instances is there's a man who's in his, in his early 80s now. And he started training when he was like in his late 70s. And so he got his black belt, you know, as an 80 something year old dude, which is really cool. You know, like it just goes to show, you know, like martial arts is something that anybody can do, anybody can excel at. So don't feel discouraged if you're, you know, old or if you've taken a, you know, break for a while and you want to come back to it. Don't be discouraged. Just, you know, just show up. That's what my instructor would always say, just show up.
Yeah. And I would add too, I feel like everybody's heard this phrase for one reason or another, but the concept of it's not about the destination, it's about the journey. That is so beyond true when it comes to martial arts. I think it's probably the most true when it comes to martial arts. The destination isn't black belt, right? It's about the journey to get there. Everybody's looks a little bit different. But don't let life circumstances completely deter you or think, you know, like Anna said, think it's too late or you can't come back, because that's not true. Be kind to yourself and understand that maybe your time isn't right now, but also understand too that it's still up to you to make it happen, right? Your circumstances might be one thing right now, and that's perfectly understandable and okay. So be kind to yourself and don't beat yourself up over it. But at some point you also have to work for it too. So finding that delicate balance, because there is a difference between being kind to yourself and, you know, letting life be what it is, and also being passive and making excuses too, right? So there's a balance between those, and you just kind of have to find it.
Well, yeah. Thank you very much, Rachel, Anna, for this discussion.
You guys. This was fun.
It has been a part two of the meaning of black belt. So again, if you, it's the first time listening to our podcast, go to part one of the meaning of black belt as well, and listen to me and David talk about that as well. And I guess we'll see you next time.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Hey, everybody, if you liked our episode, please don't forget to like and subscribe wherever you listen to your podcasts, and follow us. We are on Instagram at Urban Martial Artist. We are on Facebook, also the Urban Martial Artist. Our website is urbanmartialartists.com, and feel free to reach out at our Gmail, urbanma312@gmail.com. Thanks.